Fresh Air with Terry Gross coming your way in 21 minutes. Terry will speak with countertenor Anthony Ross Costanzo. He's about to star at the Metropolitan Opera in Philip Glass's Akhenaten. He sings in a range associated with women's voices, once sung by castrati. That's Anthony Ross Costanzo with Terry Gross coming up at noon here on 89.3 KPCC. One of the challenges in trying to understand the depth and breadth of the homelessness crisis in Southern California is also understanding the needs of those who are unhoused, whether it's substance abuse treatment, whether it's mental health services, all that, of course, above and beyond shelter. One of the ways that folks try and get to that is through the annual census, which is undertaken by the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. But the agency found in its census that only 29% of homeless Angelenos had either a mental illness or substance abuse disorder. And therefore, that means 71% did. I think most of us in our interactions daily with people who are living on the streets would seem to indicate a significantly higher percentage of people who are in need of mental health services or substance abuse treatment. Well, Los Angeles Times piece by Ben Oreskes looks at this issue and reanalyzed the data from the census. Ben, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
So what were your findings on these questions of substance abuse and mental health challenges?
Yeah, thanks for looking into this. I think that we did this, Doug Smith and I, who's the former data editor of the Los Angeles Times, and I looked at the demographic survey, which is done as part of the point in time count. And we did our own analysis of it and found that 67% of the homeless population had either a mental illness or substance abuse disorder. 46% had a mental illness, which includes post-traumatic stress, and 51% said substance abuse.
And how did you do that reanalysis? Were you looking at answers to surveys, or how'd you get to that?
Yeah. So just to step back for a sec, the point in time count, which we hear about, there's a lot of fanfare around it. It's done in January, is an estimate. And, 8,000 people fan out across the city and county and, are counting cars and tent-like structures that they see. That is taken in conjunction with a demographic questionnaire, a demographic survey that the Homeless Service Authority does. And basically, they create multipliers based on this survey that they do. We took those questionnaires, nearly 4,000 of them, and did our own analysis of it and looked at a kind of broader set of questions that they ask. And that's how we arrived at these numbers. Basically, the Homeless Service Authority takes a much narrower look at it, and we decided to do it slightly differently. And that's how we arrived at these numbers.
To me, the importance in this is it gives us a better understanding of the scope of these secondary and tertiary challenges and what the costs might be to the public to provide those services. But what do you see as the benefit?
I mean, I think that's exactly right. I think there are two parts to this. I think that, as you said in your intro, the public feels as they walk our streets like the crisis is worse. And I think that these numbers, while having biases that could mean that they're higher or lower, kind of offer another view that shouldn't be discounted. And I think that another significant point that one of your guests will make later as well is that this is a crisis of people who are living on the street, the unsheltered homeless population, which is, I think, about 75% of the county's homeless population. And there are people who are out there right now who are in deep psychological or physical distress. And I think that we hope that this data can be part of a conversation about how to help those people. Right now, we are building lots of permanent supportive housing. We are building lots of shelters, but a lot of that is not online yet. And even when it is, it probably will not be able to satisfy the needs of the population that's out there right now. So I think that in our view, this data is essential to any conversation policymakers have about how to best kind of rectify or address the crisis on our streets.
Ben, this unsheltered subset of homeless Angelenos, does that include people that are living in their cars, or is that considered to be sheltered?
I believe it does include those people. The Homeless Service Authority does break out the numbers about people who are living in cars and RVs, but this, I think, mostly looks at people who are in tents.
Okay. And so you're using the same definition as LASA is for unsheltered.
Yes, we are. Where our sort of analysis differs from theirs is on the survey, there are two questions that you need to answer to sort of be counted as having a substance abuse condition or a mental health condition or a health condition. The first is, do you have this or don't you have this? The second is, have you had this for longer than 18 months? If you say no to the second question, they don't count you. There's a reason they do that. It has to do with the federal definition of chronic homelessness. And the reason for that is they want, when this information is reported to the federal government, they want to be able to compare apples to apples. So if you're looking at LA and you're looking at San Francisco, you could have the same definition for the same thing. But in the course of doing that, it does offer a much narrower snapshot. So what our analysis does is look at people who may have said yes or no to that, and then also looked at some other questions on the survey, ones that had to do with whether or not the person who was asking the questions observed you to have one of these conditions and one other one. But that was the kind of major thing that had been excluded by the Homeless Service Authority.
Okay. And so just to clarify, you are including people that live in cars as unsheltered?
Yes.
You are. Okay. Also with us is Sarah Dusso, who's chair of the L.A. Homeless Services Authority, which does that point-in-time census of unhoused Angelenos. Ms. Dusso, thank you for being with us. Yes, you look at the Times analysis, there anything that you would take issue with the criteria they use to look at mental illness and substance abuse?
Well, I think as Ben stated, that they just simply looked at a broader brush. The LASA's point-in-time numbers simply are, you know, complying with the federal standards on how you're supposed to report. And this is, you know, so that we can compare across jurisdictions and nationally. And they took a deeper dive into the responses to the demographic survey, which is a small percentage of the overall count. A small percentage engage in a conversation with outreach workers and then self-report on these questions. And they took a deeper dive on that and added to the percentage folks who did not check the box of long-term, as Ben stated, and then folks who the person doing the questionnaire, which is simply a volunteer, they could add an observation. So I think that every analysis has aspects of it that skew upward or downward, making one group appear more vulnerable or less vulnerable. But it just doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the man-made affordable housing crisis is disproportionately affecting our most vulnerable, and that living on the streets worsens health conditions, whatever those conditions.
Yeah, well, it's a chicken and egg phenomenon, right? Because if someone already is dealing with post-traumatic stress or a mental health challenge, living on the streets would only exacerbate it.
Right.
Also, Sarah, one of the things when I saw the original LASA number of 29% dealing with mental illness or substance abuse, I thought part of that could be because you do have a certain percentage of the homeless population that we really don't see on the street, that they're, you know, often we don't see the families or the women to the degree that we do the men, and yet we know that there are thousands of them out there, but maybe they're in, you know, formal shelters or other places. So does that affect our perception?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that absolutely affects perception around this issue. But I just want to be clear that, you know, the commission is very interested in looking more at a variety of data points and looking more at exactly what people who are unsheltered need in order to make sure we can house people quickly, but also just expand access to mental health care and health care. And I've been part of the delegation that was reported in the LA Times that just came back from Italy. It's called Heart Forward LA, which is working to revolutionize access to mental health care in LA County. And we strongly support that, you know, we need to really focus on how we're looking at the needs of people first. But that, even that in mind, we don't want to, you know, each of these different data sets can skew, you know, the way we look at things. And the affordable housing crisis is certainly one very important element. Our lack of mental health care, our lack of health care in general, is another very important element as well. It's a humanitarian crisis that hits us on many different levels.
We're talking with Sarah Dussault, who's chair of the L.A. Homeless Services Authority, known as LASA. Coming up, we'll talk with Janie Roundtree of the California Policy Lab at UCLA. They just yesterday released a new report on homelessness. You're listening to Where Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Back in just 1 minute. We're talking about the challenges of homeless Angelenos. The Los Angeles Times conducted a new analysis of the point-in-time census conducted under the auspices of the LA Homeless Services Authority and found a significantly higher percentage of homeless Angelenos who have mental health challenges as well as are dealing with substance abuse. The LA Times figure of 67%, two-thirds of those who are in this unhoused cohort who need assistance because of some degree of disabling mental illness or drug abuse. With us is Janie Roundtree of UCLA's California Policy Lab, who just released a study on this. And their study found 50% of unsheltered people reported they suffer from a combination of physical health condition, mental health issue, and a substance abuse condition, what is called trimorbidity. That's half. Janie Roundtree, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. How did you conduct this assessment?
Well, thank you so much for having us on. The California Policy Lab is a relatively new research center at UCLA that partners with LASA and other public agencies to do data analysis on homelessness, among other issues. And it's led by Professor Tilvon Wachter, who's the Associate Dean of the Department of Economics. So you've asked a great question, and I did want to describe the study a little bit because we're looking at different data than what the prior two guests described. So specifically, we're looking at a national data set of nearly 70,000 surveys, and these are surveys that are given by providers or social workers who are in the field when they interact with sheltered individuals or unsheltered individuals. And unlike the demographic survey that was described previously, these surveys are really designed to prioritize people for housing. And so the questions are about, do you have a mental health, physical health, substance abuse condition that you're suffering from and that is also a cause of your most recent homeless spell or a cause of housing instability in your life? And so what we did was look at the responses among unsheltered individuals and compare them to responses among sheltered individuals and saw quite stark differences between these two groups, and specifically that individuals who are living on the street are much more likely to be suffering from health, mental health, substance abuse concerns. They're more likely to report those as the cause of their homelessness, and they're less likely to be accessing emergency shelters and more likely to be on the street for longer periods of time.
And do we know if the major factor for them not being in a shelter, aside from many cities, a lack of available beds, but is part of this also that because of their mental health state or drugs that they're using, it makes them difficult for them to be in close quarters with other people?
We don't know that for sure based on the data that we have, but I think that's a common sense theory for why that might be, and certainly something that we need to pay more attention to, specifically whether our most vulnerable people who are affected by the housing market conditions are able to access shelter that's appropriate for them. And I did want to say one really striking point about our study, which is not just the difference between unsheltered individuals and sheltered individuals, but the difference between men and women living on the street. We saw more than or twice as many women report abuse or trauma as the reason for their homelessness as men who are living on the street. So I think it's really important to ask ourselves whether the emergency housing we're providing is suitable for people with those specific needs.
And one of the things I keep returning to is if we're able to create significant new numbers of shelter beds, you're still going to have a certain percentage of homeless Angelenos who are not going to want to be in a shelter. They're going to prefer to be outside, finding that a better alternative than being sheltered. And potentially, if you have enough shelter beds to handle everybody, then it would enable cities to be able to move unsheltered people off the streets if there's an alternative. But I wonder what happens to those individuals who don't want to be in a shelter, then if they're not allowed to be on the street. Where would, you know, in the past, those people might have been jailed, but I think there's not an appetite to do that now. So then what becomes of them?
Well, I have two responses. I think my first response is that everyone working on homelessness, to my knowledge, in Los Angeles agrees that we have to house people first and then treat their conditions. So it's the housing first model, which means provide housing that isn't preconditioned on someone showing good health or compliance with their treatment. That's what the city is working towards, what the county is working towards, and it remains the best solution and one that we should all be focused on supporting in any way that we can. I think the other point that I wanted to make is that prevention is extremely important. So there is a group of people who are ill whose illness appears to be the cause of their homelessness, and I think we have to ask ourselves whether they're adequately accessing mental health or health care before they experience their homeless crisis? And is there an opportunity to keep more people in housing if we connect them more quickly to services on the front end?
We're talking with Janie Roundtree, joining us from the UCLA California Policy Lab. She's the founding executive director and the co-author of this national report on homelessness that was released yesterday. Did you see regional differences? High housing prices are said to be a significant driver of homelessness here in Southern California. But I wonder if in places where housing is less expensive, you are seeing a different composition of the homeless population.
Interestingly, we did not see regional differences in our data. We compared the responses, for example, of unsheltered individuals who are living on the West Coast to the East Coast, to the South, to the Southwest, to the Midwest, and they were pretty consistent. And in fact, for those of you who are listening who are interested in the details, we do have a technical report available on our website that will show you the detailed tables, including the regional comparisons.
All right. I want to thank you all for being with us. That's Janie Roundtree from California Policy Lab, Sarah Dussault of the L.A. Homeless Services Authority. She's the chair of the organization, and Los Angeles Times staff writer who covers homelessness and housing, Ben Oreskes. Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk. You can, of course, share your comments about any of the segments that we have, because a vital conversation online usually takes off after our segments. You can be a part of it, too. If you've never visited one of our Air Talk segment pages, maybe today, the day you can do that and take part in an online conversation, kpecc.org. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up next. Her guest is countertenor Anthony Ross Costanzo, starring in Philip Glass's Akhenaten at the Metropolitan Opera. And Anthony sings in the range associated with women's voices. Have a great day. Back with you tomorrow morning at 10 for the next Air Talk on KPCC.